McGeady. Wyke, happy to hold on. That's it. Wembley holds no fear for Sunderland anymore. After their fair share of nearly moments here over the years, they step out of the shadows and grab the limelight. The Black Cats win at this iconic ground for the first time since 1973. Thanks to one piece of magic from Aidan McGeady and a clinical finish from Lyndon Gooch.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I am joined by the horse and looking thoroughly spent, Jan Bilton.
Hello, 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 and hello.
And also by the rather more calm Terry DeFellin.
Just the one hello from me.
Well, you may wonder why Jan Bilton is full of beans, or some other sort of food he's filled up with. Jan, what are you full up to your gills with at the moment?
Pizza. Specifically, Papa John's pizza, which is a fine, fine, fine pizza. If they didn't get the hint last week, they could definitely send us some. But Sunderland are now the champions of the Pizza Cup.
Yes.
48 years since we won a competition like that, taking away kind of Division One championships and things like that, but actual cup competition at Wembley. In fact, any game at Wembley in the last 48 years, Sunderland have lost, except for yesterday when we won. And I'm very, very happy about it.
And how many times have you personally been to Wembley and seen Sunderland play?
Four
times. You've been there four times, and each time you've come home disappointed, it's fair to say, haven't you?
Very, very disappointed. Yeah, I was there in 1998 at the playoff final against Charlton. I went to the League Cup final where we took the lead against Manchester City and then got hammered.
Ow.
And then I was there for the Chequered Trade final and then the League Cup, playoff final.
Ooh.
And yeah, they were all awful, awful, awful results.
Awful, awful results. And unfortunately, of course, you would have been there yesterday, wouldn't you? You would have been at Wembley with your boy as well. He would have probably gone along as well. And you would have been there with, and to a packed house, because they packed it out last time, didn't they, back in 2019? And they would have packed it out again, because you're not going to deter a Sunderland fan. They've been there loads of times before, and they'll keep on coming back. That's the nature of them, isn't it, Jan?
We've probably got our own pub somewhere around the Wembley area. Sunderland supporters only pub. But yeah, it would have been good. Cheesy chips on Wembley Way, and have taken my son to see it. He actually sat and watched the game with me, which is quite something, let me tell you. But yeah, we watched the whole game, and he was he wasn't as emotional as me, put it that way, but he was very, very pleased.
It is just a real shame that fans couldn't have been there, but it is getting very, very close now. And today we had news that the next final there, well, no, not the next final, because the next final is the League Cup. The final after that, the FA Cup, which is on the 15th of May, could have fans, even though it is officially scheduled before the next step on the roadmap to coming out of lockdown, which was the first step that was meant to allow fans back in. And the news came out today, didn't it, Terry, that the DCMS, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, are tabling a motion that as many as 20,000 could be let into Wembley. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. Some kind of test event, I think. I mean, Normally, standard practice is to use animals for these sort of things, but no, they're going straight to the humans, and fair play to them. I'm laughing because my team didn't get to the final, so there's no possibility that I'll be there.
Do you know what? That would be brilliant if they let in 20,000 dogs and cats just to test it.
It would test the segregation, wouldn't it?
Would you?
But that is good news, though. It really is good news that they think that we're in a position where we can have that. And hopefully it's not just a publicity stunt, but they're actually doing it because they think it is safe to do so. Otherwise, they'd just be opening the doors to Cheltenham this week again, wouldn't they, if they just wanted people in?
Yeah, I mean, there's a small part of me that is moderately surprised that that somehow hasn't happened. I bet you that there were conversations at the highest possible level to try and make that happen. But no, not even the good people of Cheltenham have that much sway. And they have a lot of sway, a lot of sway, let me tell you. They must have a lot of leftover old tickets from cabinet ministers that they're ready to cash in at any moment. But yeah, I think that might have been a bit strong. But yeah, this is possibly this whole caper is possibly a massive publicity stunt, frankly, because, you know, we could all be back in lockdown by July. But they've got their plan and fans at an FA Cup final. And that would be something to behold. I mean, I remember watching an Arsenal Europa League game in the in-betweeny bit between lockdowns when they let fans back in. Which, if you look back on it now, you think, why did you do that? but anyway, they did. And it was extraordinary, even though there was only a handful of them, and it was extraordinary to listen to, and almost quite emotional, to be honest with you, just to listen to the sound of human voices and actually reacting to the what was going on the pitch. Because the Emirates is such a big cavernous stadium, it's covered over, you know, their voices carried quite well. And of course, they were probably more enthusiastic than they would normally have been had things been, you know, like 2 years ago or a year ago when they would just turn up and just like say nothing and do nothing anyway, because it's the Emirates, you know.
I don't know what it's going to be like to go back into a ground again. I can't wait, personally. And I know a lot of people are a bit anxious about crowds again, because we've been in the mindset of the last year of stay home, don't go out, stay 2 metres apart from everyone. But I think, Terry, you're right, once people get into the grounds again, they're just going to have so much energy, aren't they? Even behind a mask, they're going to be screaming and shouting and creating a good atmosphere, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a few people I've spoken to across this last year who've said, you know, that's me watching live football over. I'm not going to do that anymore. But I think that that was at the height of the horror. And I think that more people would be coming around to it. I mean, I even thought that myself. I just thought, you know, this isn't the type of thing I want to be doing anymore. But when I say going to football, I mean like to massive stadia where there's 40,000 people there rather than 100 people down the road, because obviously of the risk there. I mean, it feels like the way that people are talking is we're coming to the end of it, but we certainly haven't beaten this. And Terry's quite right that, you know, there could be further lockdowns to come. You know, we've been warned of another wave in the autumn, which would just coincide with the start of the new season, wouldn't it? But, you know, we all hope that that isn't going to happen and that we can actually go back to a bit of normality with this, because, you know, it is nice being at home, but I think we're all getting a little bit sick of it now, aren't we?
Well, yeah, but Terry, you and I will be able to do what we like after next weekend, won't we? Because we're both getting our jabs, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And we'll be able to like parade around, like going, banging our fists against the pub doors, like, open up, I've been vaccinated, open up. It's good, I'm looking forward to the entitlement.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, of course, Jan, being our resident Gen Zer, you'll have to wait a while, won't you? The voice of youth on the podcast.
I will be able to follow where you are on my phone, though, because of the microchip under your skin.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to hear Bill Gates' dulcet tones in my mind.
You see, David Icke was right, and he was a very good goalkeeper as well.
Fine broadcaster, great goalkeeper, fine broadcaster, and a prophet.
Yes.
We like Icke.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? Yeah, and we'll say the same thing after our jabs, I'm sure. Well, I, for one, am staying positive about this. We saw dips in the summer, and yes, there may be a rise in the autumn, but of course, we don't know what's coming around the corner. We have to try and stay positive. And the hope is that by the time we do get to next season, everything will be in place and that we will be able to see fans back in the grounds.
I'm just wondering if one thing will change in English football grounds once we're allowed back in again, because one thing I noticed the first time I went to see a German game in the Olympic Stadium was that in the gentlemen's restroom, all of the patrons queued up and washed their hands after they'd done their business. And I thought that was very sensible and very surprising. Now, I wonder if the Brits are going to take that on. Are they going to start washing their hands when they go to football matches? Can we please start doing that?
You know as well as I do that that's not what the hand basins are used for in English football.
I was just about to say the same myself. They are just extra urinals, aren't they? Come on.
Okay, stupid thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, for anybody listening who doesn't, for some reason, doesn't follow football, I don't know, but I don't know why. Actually, I can understand why you might listen to the podcast if you don't like football, because, you know, if you ever go to Wembley for any other kind of event and you use the toilet and you wash your hands, oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
I'm afraid so. Not me, though.
Yeah. Not me. Hopefully not the ladies lose, but I wouldn't guarantee it.
Wouldn't know. Wouldn't rule it out.
We're modern guys. We're not going to rule stuff like that out, are we? No. Yeah. If you want to go and do that, sister, yeah, right on. You go ahead. What else do you think will be different when we go back? Do you think that there will be any changes in behaviour when we go back? Do you think it will be a nicer place to go back to football afterwards? Is this a bit of a reset for fan culture?
Are you suggesting that fan culture needs a reset, Graham? Because that's opening up a fairly big door there.
I'm not saying it entirely needs a reset, but we are aware that there are uglier sides of fan culture, aren't there? And I wonder if a year of lockdown will have made that better, or maybe will it have made it worse? What could we see when things open up again?
Well, I guess the thing to think about is I think about those Millwall fans when the players took the knee.
Yeah.
The small number of Millwall fans, I should stress. And that was clearly an organised thing. It must have been, booing the taking of the knee. I think that it's possible that fans will be more vocal initially because they'll just be very pleased to come back. English football grounds tend not to be quite so vocal as, say, German football grounds because they don't have those kind of coordinated ultras or leading the singers. And I wonder whether or not we might see a little bit more enthusiasm. But I suspect it will only be a few weeks before things probably just go back to normal in that respect. I can't say as I'm expecting a huge change. I do know that the world's got a lot angrier in the last year. And, you know, it's entirely possible that that anger may indeed be reflected. And that's not what you wanted to hear, but, you know, that is the danger, I think.
Yeah, do you think so? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll probably be quite carnival-like at first, especially when you're allowed full stadiums in. I think that definitely, that's what I think will happen, especially around the clubs that are more family-orientated. You'll probably see that. But I don't think it will take long for people to slip back into the way they were, really. So I think, not that I think that, you know, going to a football match is that unpleasant. I mean, it can be. And if you don't want to listen to certain language, you don't sit in certain areas and things like that. And that's fine. But I can't see it being a kind of watershed moment where everything changes and we all start being nice and we're allowed to drink beer in the stands, for example.
Now, that is an idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you could make a case to say that football grounds would benefit from the economic boost that came from allowing fans to be able to drink. But I suspect that you'd need to pass a law in order to do that.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's really on the government's list of laws they must pass. They've got other laws they'd rather be passing instead. So I don't know how likely that is.
Well, I'm looking forward to going back to football. And I know you guys are too, perhaps at non-league first. If non-league starts again for us, we did have a bit of a worry last week because our club, Whiteleaf, who we've been season ticket holders for over a decade now, haven't we, lost its manager and lost its players and lost the guy who was doing the everyday running of the football club as well. Since then, the chairman of the club has come out and stated that he does have a lease to continue playing at the ground that they are at the moment, because that was looking very shaky. There was rumours going around that the lease that was in place had been torn up. The ground in the summer had been bought up by a Singapore-based company, which had ties with Ian Rush. And everything seems a bit shaky as far as the future of our local football club is concerned. The supporters have come together and we're trying to work out some things that we can do to help the club out. I spoke to Ian King. He wrote a really good piece on it on his blog 200%. Yeah, and what was your reaction when you read that article?
Well, it was quite a sobering read, wasn't it? Obviously, I don't know the exact detail of what has and hasn't happened. You know, for example, the lease was torn up and now it hasn't been. And, you know, is the company that bought the facilities dodgy as maybe they sound? They may be, you know, maybe lovely people. I don't really know all the detail, which to be honest with you, I find quite frustrating when I read it, really, because it's great that someone from kind of outside of our little world has taken an interest in it. I know The Athletic did as well, which was great to see. But until I know what's what, it's hard to form an opinion on it without being, you know, libelous, really.
Yeah.
But I really hope that it doesn't go the way that it kind of looks like it might go, because I just think it's a really important part of the community. It's only a small club, and it'd be really good if the fans could do something. You couldn't do this. You couldn't get fans involved if it was a giant Premier League club. No. No one's going to have those kind of finances. But, you know, there may be something we can do in the local communities, keep it going, even at a lower level, as long as we can still get together and watch them play as a community.
The club doesn't really have any assets anymore. The only asset it's got really is its fan base and its position in the Isthmian League. Is there a way that we can see this as being an opportunity rather than a crisis?
Well, I'm of the view that if a football club doesn't own its own ground, then that is comfortably its greatest asset. The ambitions of that football club are going to be kept back, because in the event that you run into any kind of financial difficulties, you've always got that to rely on. But that's not the case anymore. Irama Sports, I think, is the name of the company. They are a kind of sports agency, and they use these facilities for sporting activity. You know, they are in the business of sport, which is worth pointing out, because, of course, the alternative might have been if they could be bought by a property developer, who might then have gone, well, we might not be able to build flats over this, but we're not going to invest in the stadium. So it's possible that if a deal can be done, then in the short term, it might actually be quite good, because it relieves a great deal of the financial burden of the upkeep of the stadium, because all you're doing is paying rent and it's down to the landlords to look after the stadium. So if that happens, and assuming that Whiteleaf are able to maintain their Isthmian League license, we can at least be optimistic of football returning when the season starts, going back to Leaf with our season tickets, and that would be great. But yeah, as I said, the only note of caution that I'd strike is the lack of those physical assets, the bricks and mortar that successful football clubs, I think, genuinely need.
Yeah, and I think the most dangerous aspect at the moment is, like what Jan was saying, is there is so much we don't know about what the future is going to be for the club. And that, of course, is the most frustrating. But it also, in times like this, when everyone's on a bit of an edge anyway, you're always going to react to something like this, perhaps more emotionally than you would do normally. It's March now. We've still got another 5 months until the season starts. Hopefully, we'll see some more good news coming out rather than more worrying news. I don't think it can get much more worrying apart from the worst news. We can only remain optimistic, can't we, at this point?
There could be a lot of clubs that go to the wall because of losses due to the pandemic. The sad thing about this is that, you know, if they go to the wall, that will only be a contributing factor. And that's what's really tragic about all of this, really.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. What else did we say we were going to talk about?
Jurgen Love.
Let's reach down into our elasticated waistbands and see if we can pull out some opinions on this one. Terry, Jogi Löw is no longer the German manager. Is that right?
No, Jogi Löw will leave at the end of the Euros. He was due to leave a year later, but he decided to pack it in at the end of the Euros. And so speculation in Germany is rife as to who will replace him. And all of the front runners have said they're not interested. Hansi Flick doesn't want it. Jürgen Klopp says he doesn't want it. Julian Nagelsmann says he doesn't want it. And I don't want it either.
No one wants to jump into those stretch pants, do they? I wonder why.
Not until they've been watched thoroughly. I still can't get over the fact that I once shook Jogi Löw's hand. I mean, I know. It's interesting because it really does tell you about where the national team is these days, and where, not just in Germany, but I think certainly in Europe, is that once upon a time, they would have gone to the top managers and said, right, who wants this job? And, you know, there would have been some interest. But club football is just so important now that the managers just, they don't want to leave it. Klopp may end up leaving Liverpool, perhaps a bit prematurely, largely because of the results have been poor, and also perhaps the combination that Steven Gerrard is coming to blossom at the time that he is. But really and truly, he wouldn't leave Liverpool for the Germany job. Similarly, Hansi Flick, why would you leave the most successful club in the world in order to do that? And Julian Nagelsmann is, what, 12? I mean, he's got plenty of time to be thinking about this, maybe in the future. So you could be looking at middle-class managers, like guys. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Christian Streich do the job. I mean, again, the idea of maybe him getting him out of Freiburg for anything other than away game is quite difficult. But, I mean, it is something that they could do. But they could end up, like, going for one of these really old-school maverick guys. Someone suggested Christoph Daum, who was the guy who got the job back in 2000. But he got done for the old Colombian marketing powder and they had to withdraw his offer. This could be his chance to come back and that would be awesome. But, yeah, it's really interesting how the landscape has changed. We knew this, but it's when the job for the German national team comes up, which has got to be one of the most prestigious international jobs in world football, not to mention one of the most lucrative as well, and how they're going to really struggle to find someone. But just a quick word of tribute to Jogi Löw. I mean, I know his legacy has been tarnished somewhat by events and by, you know, him not really building on that success of 2014, but he did lead Germany to World Cup success in 2014, to which he does deserve a tremendous amount of respect, far more than he's getting from me right now, frankly.
Ralf Rangnick's not doing much at the moment, is he?
Well, Ralf Rangnick is also a name that has been bandied about. I suspect that the issue with Ralf Rangnick is that he'll want to do his own thing, and I don't know whether or not the DFB will want that. And there are other clubs who want Ralf Rangnick. Most recently is Schalke. Schalke would like him to be their sporting director. But I don't know. I recently jested on Twitter that Ralf Rangnick was so desperate to avoid the DFB's call that he's now currently talking to Schalke. But that's going to be difficult because, you know, there's so much politics in Schalke at the moment, and Rangnick will want the keys to the place. He'll also want money. And so if he, because, I mean, the great work that he did at Hoffenheim and at the Red Bull thing was all done because he was able to spend lots and lots of money. He spent it well, invested it extremely well, but he does need it, and Schalke have got none of it. So he'll have to bring that money himself if he wants to make a success out of it. So I don't know whether or not that was happening. At the weekend, that looked absolutely nailed on, but now it's all like, we don't know now. So who knows what will happen with Ralf Rangnick. Hopefully, he'll come to Crystal Palace, because I've always wanted to see him, you know, manage an English team or take over an English team, Ralf Rangnick. I really would. And he's a massive Anglophile. I think he'd love it too.
I reckon we should export one of our fine English managers to manage the German national team. Send over Steve McLaren or something. He's got experience in the Bundesliga, doesn't he?
Steve McLaren could do a job, definitely, yeah.
If I hadn't been so kind about Sam Allardyce, I would have said Sam Allardyce would go out there for a game.
Pint of wine, pint of wine. Yes, I know it wasn't actually a point.
Well, talking about Sam Allardyce, why don't we discuss what's going on at the bottom half of the table at the moment? It's hotting up at the bottom there, though. I say, Terry, I mean, like, what do you care? Palace are mid-table, aren't they? Just one position below Arsenal, 11th, aren't they?
Mid-table, yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about relegation, then yeah, look to yourself, chum. Look to yourself. yeah, Brighton finally got that deserved win. Which it has been very funny to see Brighton's sort of like combined XG and then their combined points total and just laughing at it. It's easy when you're, oh, I'm not a neutral, but it's easy when you can take an objective view and just think these guys are just being horrifically unlucky, and they've been extremely unlucky this season. They were robbed by Palace. it was brilliant.
That was the most Brighton game of the season, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the fact that it happened against Crystal Palace just makes it all the sweeter. I think back to that game against United, like not the last one, but the one before, and all the craziness that happened, you know, in the final minutes of that match. I think that they've been extremely unlucky, and I think that Brian Potter, you know, is an excellent coach.
Graham.
And I know his name. I think that Brian Potter is an excellent coach, and it's just, you get these runs, don't you, with clubs, and they just have such bad luck. But what they haven't done is they haven't lost their heart. They believe that they're still good enough, and they managed to get a result and are pulling away. I'd be really surprised if they went down, particularly given just how wretched Newcastle are. I would like Fulham, as we've discussed before, I'd like Fulham to stay up, because Fulham And I quite like Newcastle to go down because one of my best friends is a Sunderland fan. So, you know.
Well, yeah, and I think the
and Jan as well. Jan's a Sunderland fan. As well.
Very good.
Well, yeah, I think the only thing that will save Newcastle is if they can just not be as crap as Southampton, I would think, in the last 10 games of the season.
Yeah, I think so. They've got a game in hand over Fulham, so and 2 points clear of them. So they haven't got a bad side. They just seem to be in turmoil, don't they, on the pitch and off the pitch as well. But it's more their issues in the past have always been to do with, you know, how the club is run, who's running it, who's going to buy it and things like that. But now it seems to be squarely on the pitch. But they've got points on the board. They've got a game in hand, so they could well stay up. But it is looking dicey.
Were you surprised when you heard the news about Chris Wilder this week?
Not really. I was surprised a few weeks ago when I found out that they were owned by a very, very wealthy individual. And it made me wonder how long he would then hang around. It was going to happen. They have to make a change. It's a massive roll of the dice. They're not going to stay up. But maybe they need to make a change now so they're ready for next season.
Yeah, they've got to double their points just to get out of the relegation zone at the moment. So they are effectively down. Terry, were you surprised by that sacking?
No, I wasn't that surprised because they've just been absolutely terrible. But then, of course, when you find out the backstory to it and the relationship that Chris Wilder had with the owner was not terribly good, and that perhaps this was likely to happen anyway, it's just probably been accelerated somewhat because of the club's poor form. And as Jan said, may well be that they're doing a bit of a Schalke and they're paving the way for Championship football next season and getting themselves ready to make that appointment. But they've got some work to do because I didn't watch the whole game. I only watched the highlights of the game against Leicester, and they were utterly wretched, utterly wretched. And that 5-0 scoreline really flattered them. So there's a problem there because you have to persuade the players that it's worth playing for that club now. And they clearly hadn't lost faith in Chris Wilder. And so the owner's got a problem there because he's sitting on a lot of expensive footballers. He's now presumably got to be able to persuade them that it's worth playing for this club. Otherwise, it could just be horrific. It could be traumatizing. The likelihood is that they will not be able to bounce back up again, because that is by no means a certainty in this day and age, although clubs do it. But not every team that goes down goes straight back up again. And the way things are with Sheffield United, they could set off a series of events that could lead to disaster. So I suspect they'll come back and think, well, we should have just hung on with this guy until the end of the season and then thought about it in the summer and then made some changes then. But yeah, it could be an incredibly difficult last part of the season for Sheffield United and their fans.
Do you think that relationship has contributed to the poor form of the club? Because they did so well last season, didn't they? I mean, they were ripping up trees all over the place. And then this season's like the polar opposite. In fact, worse than that. So something as massive has changed there.
I mean, we may not find out years from now until people are probably quite candid about what happened, whether or not things went south as a consequence. And I read reports that there was frustration towards Wilder because of the transfer policy, and there was a number of players that they wanted to bring in, but they didn't bring in because Wilder was focusing on different targets, and that maybe caused it. I don't think it's because they got found out necessarily, but yeah, maybe that kind of overlapping centre-back tactics that he did. Unless you significantly improve the squad, the likelihood is that people will figure out ways of combating the way that he played. And they were something of a novelty last season, but this season they've been worked out. And maybe that's the issue too.
They sort of did the right thing. They had a good season largely with the side that got them promoted. And then in the summer, strengthened it with a few key signings. None of those signings have actually come to anything, which can happen. To have three of them bomb, though, is unfortunate. It does look like they've just run out of ideas as a unit. But I'm with you, Terry. I think it's worrying when you see that result, that 5-0. Or, yeah, all right, Leicester are a decent team. They're third in the table. But to go down 5-0, that's not a scoreline that you've associated with Sheffield United since they've come up, or at all under Chris Wilder. I can't help but feel they're going to go down like Huddersfield and just sink to the bottom half of the Championship and be fighting relegation for the next couple of seasons. That's how it looks anyway at the moment, but you can't tell anything from one game. West Brom, on the other hand, look like they're ready to go down. That's the impression I got when I was watching the Palace game. Even that, with the fact that Allardyce just stayed sat down for most of the game and let Sammy Lee do all the shouting on the touchline.
Allardyce presented the appearance of a man who knew the jig was up. You don't want to look into people's hearts, but I think there are people who feel that Sam just does these things for the money rather than necessarily for the passion. I suspect that probably isn't the case because, like, bluntly, there are other things you could do for money, and he still keeps going back in it. But it fed into that narrative that maybe he's kind of a bit of a disinterested guy, that he's a bit of a mercenary. And it felt like that when you were looking at him. But equally, in fairness, I don't think Roy Hodgson looked particularly enthused and energized then. I suspect that it's a really long season.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you're looking at Sam and he's thinking, right, we're finished. We're going to get relegated. There's not much more I can do now. And now I have to see this through, and it's going to be incredibly unpleasant. And so what else is to do but just sit there with your mask on and just think, oh, fucking hell. And also, in fairness, for Roy as well, he's probably thinking, well, yeah, right, we've won. We beat West Brom 1-0. We beat comfortably one of the worst teams in the division. Probably a mid-table championship side at this point, 1-0. I think that there's a degree of lethargy going on in that with some of the clubs there because it's just been such a slog this season. And I think that there's an element to that in it. But to return to your point, yeah, I'd say West Brom look like, they're ready to concede. They would certainly resign with a gammon if this was a backgammon match.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the fact that there's no fans in the crowd, I think some managers just aren't bothering. Some managers see that coming out of their box, waving their arms about, and more as conducting the fans rather than actually encouraging the players.
Yeah, fans will make a hell of a difference. I mean, going back to Newcastle, can you imagine what Steve Bruce would have been? Good? Would he still be in his job now if the fans were allowed in?
Yeah.
No, he wouldn't. He would have gone ages ago.
I don't think the fans would be in. I think they'd have shut themselves out by now.
They would have. And you know, well, you could argue rightly so. They may have made a change and they may have had a more positive end to the season instead of scrapping it out. I think with Allardyce, though, I wonder whether he has taken that as a view to getting another season out of it. Maybe because, you know, he could well try and bring them up from the championship and start again. You know, there's only so long he could have survived without being relegated when his only gigs that he gets, or the only gig he gets, is clubs that are about to be relegated. So it was going to get him eventually, wasn't it? So whether West Brom are going to try and rebuild with him, I don't know. We could if they did. You know, he's local to the area. Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah, because I'm kind of ignoring the fact that, he is local to the area. So to a degree, There's a whiff of Hodgson about this one as well, isn't there? Sort of like local boy finally coming back to sort of his hometown club. I guess it is a shame. There is definitely that kind of whiff of Neil Warnock about him as well, isn't there? This kind of thing where you sort of like think, well, you look at him and you think, why on earth do you do this to yourself? But there's clearly something that compels them to go back in. I mean, actually, Big Sam had just about got that groove in that pundit's chair on TV sorted. I think he was doing BeIN Sports, sat there with Andy Gray and Richard Keys, probably having an absolute whale of a time. And it must have taken quite a lot to get him out of that chair. And so, yeah, it must, I'm doing him a disservice. It must have been, it must be a deep hunger inside. And you do wonder about guys at that age. I think if I get to that age and someone said, all right, you've made enough money, you can retire, I'd probably say, right, see you then. But that's, I think that's the thing about having a calling, isn't it? You're called to football. If you love it so much, you just can't get out of it. Then it must be extremely difficult to know when the right time is to leave. And I'm persuaded, and I agree. I think it would be great if they gave him a crack at getting them out of the championship next season. Mm. I'd like to see that.
He's branded really as a troubleshooter, isn't he? You bring him in when you
Red Adair,
club. Yeah, exactly. But you know, maybe it's time for him to reinvent himself and kind of go back to what he did with Bolton, really. And, you know, it would be good to see him do that with West Brom.
I think he's there more for winning the championship next season. I think if it is...
Do you really?
I think if it's Newcastle, West Brom and Sheffield United that go down, I think it's only West Brom that will come back up again. I think they're just best equipped for it. Unless, of course, Newcastle do get taken over and they're buying whoever the 2022 equivalent of Robinho is at the next transfer window. There are plenty of clubs that are run by billionaires and they're not all up in the Champions League slots, are they?
No, they're not. But this is the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. You know, he's got a few quid.
Yeah.
So, you know, but, I think you probably...
He may have a plan as well. I mean, if he's got the ambitions to do so. I mean, other people's ambitions are with their clubs are different. They have, shall we say, less sporting ambitions. or less overtly political ambitions as well to work with their football club. We'll see what happens, assuming that that's how it is. I mean, we may be completely wrong about Newcastle and their possible takeover should they get relegated. But you have to assume at some point that somebody will buy that club because they can't stay with Mike Ashley forever, right?
Yeah.
We could be still talking about this in 10 years' time, couldn't we?
It feels like we have been talking about it for 10 years. Mind you, this season does feel very long. Games seem long at the moment. Is it just me that sitting down and watching a whole game seems to last forever at the moment?
Or it could be that you're spending way too much time on social media and your attention span's been shrinking and you're finding it harder to sit through an entire game.
I think it's the whole binging box set stuff. Having rinsed through Netflix and thinking, I've got to watch something. I can't watch more football. Oh, look, there's more football on. Oh, I'll just watch that. Maybe it's I've just lost the ability to recognise when I've stopped watching one game and I've started watching another. It's that whole box set mentality, isn't it?
Next match, and you just like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Next match starts in 15 seconds. Yeah, skip intro. Well, I did that the weekend because there was a slight overlap with the Papa John's final and the North London Derby. So I sort of like skipped to the North London Derby straight in there. Yeah, I'm not saying the box sets are bad because obviously we produce one every week. And this week we will have a packed one because we're going to have four FA Cup quarterfinals to look forward to spaced over the weekend. Terry, you'll also be writing about Cologne Dortmund. That's a nice local derby, isn't it?
It's a nice historic local derby as well. And Dortmund lost to Cologne at home for the first time in about 18 years, the last time these two met. So there's some beef. But Dortmund much improved these days. But knowing Dortmund, Cologne will probably win.
They had a great game against Sevilla, didn't they, last week?
That was an amazing game, that was. And it was as close as it looked, to be honest with you. But then they followed it up with a tremendous result against Hertha BSC, which could have gone badly wrong. And can I just say, guys, I appreciate there's still quite a lot of people who talk about Jadon Sancho, and rightly so, but the other English guy there, Jude Bellingham, he really took charge of that game towards the end of that Sevilla game. I mean, really showed leadership for a 17-year-old in his rookie season. Give me the ball, I'll deal with this. And indeed, he showed it again against Hertha as well when things were tricky. If he carries on like this, I mean, he's going to be such an important player for England. I mean, as an Englishman, I can't wait to see him embedded into the heart of that England midfield. It's possibly the player that we've been looking for years to fill in that slot. We'll see. Still very, very early days. But just watching those last two games, and you're seeing what his potential is. It's very, very exciting. Urge England fans to do watch Dortmund this season while Sancho and Bellingham are playing in that team.
If you want to see what Terry thinks of that fixture, and if you want to see what we think of the top-of-the-table clash in Ligue 1 between Lyon and PSG and all of those FA Cup quarterfinals, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link to the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe! Or you can go along to the blog and read it there. Either way, we don't mind.
Subscribe.
Subscribe. All right, subscribe. Subscribe. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Fellman, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @SoundOfFootball, or on Facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.
Well, you'll be able to read what Terry says about that game, which is on Saturday afternoon, in our box set. And if you want to see what's in our box set, apart from all the FA Cup quarterfinals, no.
Just subscribe to the fucking thing, will you?
That's the tagline we've been looking for all these years.
Exactly. If you want to see what Terry thinks.